and just focus on teaching. And right now, teachers can't do any of those things. It's becoming a profession that people do for a few years and then move on to something else. And that's not the best way to create great teaching.
Brian Jones is a writer, activist, and former New York City school teacher. You can read his piece, Job Protections Do Not Hurt Students, at the New York Times.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the Media Watch Group FAIR. This show is engineered by Alex Noyes and co-hosted by Peter Hart. I'm Steve Rendell. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock. Next is Bread and Roses. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Edgefield Concerts, presenting an evening with Joanne Baez and Indigo Girls next Thursday. Both Indigo Girls and Joanne Baez are playing full sets, also presenting Steve Winwood next Saturday. Ticket at edgefieldconcerts.com and Edgefield box office on the night of the show. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting Three Women and the Truth, an evening with Mary Gauthier, Eliza Gilkinson, and Lynn Miles, Tuesday, June 24th. Tickets and information for Three Women and the Truth, June 24th, at aladdin-theater.com.
Hey everybody, elections are coming up for the KBOO Board of Directors. Right now we're looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm or pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The application deadline is midnight June 30th, so don't delay. And thank you for supporting community radio, KBOO.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That is 35 years. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists, and we are always open to new members. You need no experience. But if you are interested in getting involved as a producer, host, or engineer, you can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator. Her email, volunteer@kboo.org. You can also call 503-231-8032, extension 213. Find Bread and Roses on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. There you can listen to podcasts. You can also share some show ideas or comments if you have some. And also on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. Well, I am your host today, Delphine Crescenzo, and I'm here with
Leanne Kranz. And tonight, we welcome Nicole, a transgender woman who is here to talk about her lifelong journey to simply be herself. Nicole was born in the small town of Sublimity, Oregon, raised by a logger father and homemaker mother with 10 other siblings in a Catholic family. Nicole knew at an early age that she was a girl inside. but sensed that it wasn't safe to express it, even to those closest to her. She excelled as an athlete, played college and professional baseball before settling into a long career as a math teacher. Nicole married, had three children, a couple who are listening tonight. 4 decades of hiding her true self took its toll on her physical and psychological well-being, and she found the courage to speak to her family and closest friends. Then, after 20 years of teaching in a conservative Portland area school district, Nicole decided to transition as a professional in the classroom. She is here tonight to share her personal story, to help others understand what transgender people experience and how our community can support them. Her goal is, quote, as a human being, is to make the world more aware of the fact that we are all in it together, that, quote, difference is the norm of the universe, and love is the glue. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
I would like if we could to start with a basis for a definition of transgender.
Okay, it's basically when you are aware of yourself and you are aware of your body and you see all the people around you and they all are basically comfortable being who they are,
mm-hmm.
and you find yourself not being like that. You feel like there's something wrong here. I want to do what those people are doing over there, and the people that I'm with and around and being told I am is not something I can be like. So
mm-hmm.
It was very, very, I didn't know what it was. I mean, I was a little kid, and when you're first aware of it, you go, there's something wrong, but I don't think I can tell anybody about it. So that's the way it started.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the misconceptions that people have about transgender people?
I suppose they would think that the majority of us are very femme types. There's a huge spectrum that I would like to say for the transgender community, all the way from a very simplified version of, say, a fetishist to the other end of the spectrum where they're a full-blown transsexual. So, and everything in between, which is why you'll see a lot of people that are said to be transgender, but they act differently than what you would perceive them to be. And a lot of people think of transgender as some, you know, they get these ideas from shows like, some of the crazier shows that show transgender people as drag queens.
Yes.
And then they make fun of them. And it's just Jerry Springer comes to mind as one of those shows that absolutely does the transgender population no service whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about the issue with misgendering and maybe enlighten us on ideas around pronouns.
Well, once someone, and you can all speak to this, that when you're a certain gender or perceive yourself to be one, then the pronoun that people refer to you as is very, very personal to you. And when you're misgendered in a situation, it's very uncomfortable. And not only that, in a general, suppose that you have people in your life that don't accept what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they continually, just to rub it back in your face for some reason, misgender you on purpose. Well, when you're in a place where the general public is around, and they hear that, that causes a situation where it could run into an ignorant person sitting next to that happening, and they hear it and they go, what are you talking about? And then cause a huge problem where sometimes maybe even somebody could be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that should be done at all. And people like myself, I'm so in tune to it every time I'm around people. And it's really hard for the people I know who knew me before to say he or him. And my stomach just cringes when that happens. And I know the people that do it don't mean to do it. And they'll change it right away. And they'll try and cover themselves with the however they can do that, as comfortable as they can. But but it's really uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. It's like anybody being called the opposite gender when, you know, in fact, you are what you are. So it's a very uncomfortable thing. So, yeah, don't misgender people. I mean, that's so simple.
So what's a good way to actually approach, maybe find out about, you know, someone's gender, how they want to be identified?
Well, I can say that I look like a woman. Gender me as a woman. Why would I say gender me as a man? I don't want to be gendered as a man. I don't look like that. So it's the visual triggers are just like you would for anybody else. I mean, you don't ask people, how do you want to be gendered? You know, how do you want me to say your pronoun? Are you a he or her, a she, an it? You know, people don't do that. It's just in normal conversations that people refer to the pronoun of a person that they perceive to be. So for me, the only problem comes when it's someone who I have known a long time and they knew the other person. And so that, that they have a really hard time, although they're getting really, really good at it. I mean, it's been 8 years and where, well, only 5 years that I've done it and full time in work and everything. But so it's a gradual thing. I don't know why it's taken them so long, but some of them just...
But what I hear you say is listen to the person.
Exactly.
And mimic he, she, them want to be called.
And when that request is made, if it's not followed, it's like an offense. It's it's totally taken an offense. And I'll tell you, the opinion I have of that person is they're just ignorant, just ignorant. And they just want to be mean. Because they're ignorant, so it's hard.
It is hard.
And if a person makes a mistake, an honest mistake, is there a recommended way to just deal with it without drawing too much attention to it? I mean, just to
try harder.
If they do it once in a conversation, you know, I kind of shrink at the moment that they say it, and I have to let it go because I can't let it get to me all the time. If they do it again, then I do kindly remind them, I'm not a he, I'm a she, hello, you know, so, and they go, I'm so sorry. And I don't like to make a deal about it, but I don't like to be misgendered either. It just hurts when that happens. I hate it. Hate it. Anybody who does it, I hate it. But yeah.
So can you talk about the very beginning of your awakening, that there was a difference between how you felt and how you were treated in the world? How was it like to grow up with that?
Well, what I can speak to that as, it was just an uncomfortability. once I knew that something was different about me, and that was about the age of five, when I tried on my first dress, and it was like magic. It was like Christmas Day, every day. And I didn't know why I liked it so much. What was what part of my soul was totally in tune with that part of our world? And I had a brother that played with me and had a dress on as well. And the next day I said, let's do that again. And he said, no way, I'm not doing that again. That's stupid. And it was at that moment that I said, oh my God, I think I may have a problem here with people that I can't share this with me. So it was probably at that moment where I started to have a rock in my shoe that I couldn't get out of my shoe. I had it for a long, long time. It was just, I didn't know why. I didn't know why I felt like that. And I tried to make it normal that I thought everyone else thought about themselves the same way and that there was nothing really wrong with me and that if there was something wrong with me, I could overcome it. I could be normal. I could show people I act like everybody else. And I did for a very long time. But I always had that rock in my shoe. Always had that rock in my shoe. I was always, well, it was a part of me that my own self-image suffered for it because I did not like who I was at all. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I would just look at myself and go, what is wrong with you? You're crazy. And you're a freak. Because I know that word had appeared, you know, later on, but early enough in my life that I knew that that was associated with my condition, which how I felt, and that scared the crap out of me. Just totally scared the crap out of me. There's nothing I could do about it either. I couldn't tell anybody. I always worried that if people ever found out, that they would never want to be my friend. And even worse, to think that my family would ever find out that they would disown me. And so you carry that. And then being raised in this Catholic religion where you think because of it, you're going to go to hell your whole life. Hmm. You just can't imagine the kind of anxiety that creates in a little kid that I carried with me through adulthood until I finally did something about it. But, oh my God, it was horrendous, horrendous.
Yeah, because the message is that something is wrong with you,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
There's something that needs to be changed.
Right. And it's funny that that gets brought up, and the people's argument is that God made you that way, and you need to be that way. And I thought about that actually before I even came on tonight, that God didn't make me. My mom and dad made me. And mom and dads can, you know, take drugs and do stuff that might screw up the fetus of the baby. Not that that happened in my family, but God made my brain. God didn't make my body. Mm-hmm. My parents made my body. So, you know, that those two things didn't go together in my life the way I wanted them to from a very, you know, just from the beginning. You know, God did not make me this way. Mm-hmm. God made my brain, and I wish I would have had the body to match it, but now I do. Now I'm getting there. So, yeah.
I think it's maybe very important to mention tonight that, as I understand it, when many transgender people become aware of the situation at a very young age, like 3 to 5, mm-hmm. and they spend so much time dwelling on these thoughts and reading the world around them, mm-hmm. and the suicide, thoughts of suicide, the rate is astounding.
Astounding.
Can you talk about that a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, I didn't realize how high they were, but I can say that myself, when you get rejected, when you get kind of kicked to the curb, and all the people that were in your life that said they loved you, and then they leave your life. So that really, really twisted my brain about people who care about other people and what makes them, well, and in fact, the idea that, and I know that everyone tries to be happy. Everybody's goal is to be happy. And my goal to be happy was that rock in my shoe. I needed to get that rock out of my shoe. I knew that would, I had a beautiful world around me, I thought. I had good friends, I thought. Mm-hmm. And they're good people. And, you know, don't get me wrong, they're really good people. They just don't understand what happened. And they still don't. But their world of happiness that they're pursuing, they're looking for it outside of themselves. And what I found on my journey is that the happiness that I was looking for outside of myself was really inside myself. Yeah. So as soon as that happened, where I realized my happiness was making myself congruent with my mind, then I had this moment where I became elated that I found my happiness. Well, what happened was everyone around me became sad. And that kind of shocked me. But I guess from a little kid's way back when, I knew that the moment that they would find out about me, they would leave me. And that fear came to fruition. And I don't know that I created that because of thinking about it, but I think it happens to people all the time. And it's just a really sad, sad thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember what your question was.
No.
It all underscores the high rate of suicide.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the suicide rate in the transgender community, from what I've heard lately, it's at least 41% have either attempted or done the follow through with the suicide. Mm-hmm. And I can say that I could talk to that because I have had those thoughts myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get to a point where the rejection is so heavy and the people that you cared about are gone. And you go, what the heck do I need to be around for? I got to go find a bridge and jump off of it. Mm-hmm. But you also get the courage to say, no, I need to show people. And I really do figure that my message is more about telling people it isn't about being transgender. It is about being happy. And once you find that happiness, no matter how it is or how it comes to you or how you figure it out, that's a huge accomplishment. And I think it's our biggest accomplishment in our life to find our self-love. So,
yeah. For me, it's also, you know, the piece about the early age, you know, I think that people who end up, you know, having who they identify as and their body match, they don't really, you know, pay so much attention that from a very young age, you know, and so, you know, therefore the people, you know, who are ignorant very often ask, you know, when did you become?
Exactly. You know? When did you choose to do that?
Yes. Not at all, you know, seeing the privilege that they have that, right. you know, in fact, it kind of matched for them. So they didn't
exactly.
really like put didn't, too much no. thought into it.
And they think that the way they think mm-hmm. is how everyone else thinks.
Exactly.
And yes. it is so not mm-hmm. true. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what I was going to say before that, but it's, they just take it for granted that everyone's like them. And then they say, because they think like that, that it was a choice.
Yeah.
Because they'd never choose it.
Yeah.
Well, of course they'd never choose it. But they say it's a choice. And then I tell them, and I'm telling them right now, if it's a choice, why would I go through what I've gone through? Mm. I've went through a horrific deal to get to be myself. Horrific. And who would choose that? Who would choose to lose family, to lose friends? To risk being fired from a job that I had had for so long. I didn't know if I was going to keep that job or not. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I did, and thankfully it's going well, but I didn't know. So I was risking everything. And a lot of people are that transition, as I did, are told before they do that, that there's a possibility you're going to lose everything you have. Mm-hmm. Your house, your children, your spouse, your friends, your job. You will have nothing at the end of it except yourself. And for us, it's worth it because we hadn't been ourselves our whole life. And what's unusual about it, and I really, really have a hard time understanding it myself, why it becomes so strong as we get older. When I was a little kid, it didn't seem like it was as strong, and I was able to just kind of poo-poo it and mm-hmm. keep it off on the edge. And maybe the rock wasn't so big in the mm-hmm. shoe. But as I got older, oh my God, I just... It got, the rock became a boulder mm-hmm. and I couldn't take it anymore. It was like I was miserable. And my spouse recognized that. And, you know, to her credit, I say that she allowed me to be who I am now mm-hmm. because that's, you know, as huge of a deal as that has been, you know, to lose the love of your life is just horrific. But if that's got to happen, then I hope that I can get a gift in return. And I did, and it was myself. So, you know, how do you measure that? How do you say, well, I'll trade you that for that? No. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I'm happy that I'm happy with myself. And I love myself. I just have a hard time with everybody else. And why the heck is that such a big deal? Look at me. I'm smiling with my smile going all the way around my head. Aren't you okay with that?
Yes.
No, we're not okay with that. So yeah, that's the hardest. That's why I do what I do. That's why I try to talk to people and I talk at schools and colleges where I do try to really hit that home. You know, people, we're all meant to be happy.
Yeah.
And if we could all just recognize our happiness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, is what you you shared with us in the intro that Leanne shared. You said difference is the norm mm-hmm. of the universe.
Oh my God! Yes,
this speaks to me. Let's take a short musical break. And the songs tonight were selected by Nicole and are very meaningful to her and really underscore her message.
This is "Love Is the Answer."
Oh, I love that song.
Bye.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. I'm also hosting with Leanne Kranz, Feminist News and Public Affairs on KBOO. We're here every Friday. And our guest tonight is Nicole, transgender woman who is here to share her story about her transition in her personal, professional, and civic life.
That song was Love is the Answer by England Dan and John Ford Coley, handpicked by our guest tonight, Nicole. Many of us have heard that song a billion times in the 70s, but it wasn't until you picked it out for the show that I really listened to it, and it really does underscore your message
much. It's so incredible. That song is a gorgeous song. Love is the answer. It is the answer. It is the answer. Yeah.
Can be found in soft rock. Who knew? So, Nicole, can you tell us about how you navigated, for lack of a better term, the man's world?
Oh, God. It was a foreign world to me because...
And us. Yeah, just kidding.
It truly was foreign, but I was, you know, I saw the role I had to play, and I was just an actor. That's all it was. But like the intro said, I was a really good athlete, and that escape for me allowed me to keep my mind off of the rock in my shoe and allowed me to excel at a sport where I would get reverence from the people around me, where I would not be picked on. Although as a really little kid, I was only like 5 feet tall and 90 pounds by the time I was a freshman in high school, but I handled the ball so well playing basketball and baseball that I was able to have a respect that other kids envied. I would, you know, I'd be the starting point guard on the basketball team. I was the starting shortstop on the baseball team. So those were the key positions for a little kid, if you had to be little, that you still gain respect. And I beat out all these other people. So I had to play. You know, if I would have been a crappy athlete, I don't know what I'd have done. I do not know what I'd have done. I'd probably been at home in the closet of my sisters. But but yeah, that's another story. But yeah, the sports truly kept my mind off of things for a long time, all the way through college. Even though that rock was still there, I was at least able to, I still didn't know what it was. Because back then, and this is in the 70s and 80s, there was no internet. There were no books on the topic. I'd go to the library and look for books on the topic, and I didn't even know what to call it. Mm-hmm. And so I would search and search and search and never find anything. So here I am thinking I'm the only one in the whole world like this. And every other person like me was thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And so until 1995 was the first year I knew that anybody else was like me. I swear to God.
Wow.
And so, you know, born in 1956, you do the math, it's a long time to have to carry this rock on your shoulder of you're going to hell. You know, you are an abomination, so-called. I mean, that's what they always throw at you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just horrible to have to think like that. And then put on this happy face, you know? And I was so happy with my family, but it wasn't compensating for my inner sadness because I knew something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. In fact, when I transitioned, I did not know that that would be it. I did not know. I knew it had to be something like it. I mean, there was something that had to make me happy. And I knew how I felt, and I was hoping that it would do it, but mm-hmm. I still wasn't sure, mm-hmm. you know, because it wasn't. It's not something that people still have never heard of it.
Mm.
They don't even know what transgender is. And in this day and age, that is mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling. But they think they know what it is once they hear it. Oh, yeah, that's Jerry Springer show. Yeah, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just got a horribly negative connotation. Mm-hmm. So I'm here, and I'm telling you, we are beautiful people. We are loving and happy. So... If you don't like it, I guess that's too bad. So
transitioning did turn out to be
it was the best
trick.
Thing. It was, and I've never been happier. So I didn't know that was going to be it, you know, especially when I was a little kid. You know, I'd done a long time ago. But I wouldn't have experienced what I experienced all those years and had the love that I had with my spouse and have those children that I have who are just the love of my life. And so it's just, you just don't know. I know there's a higher thing going on. I really do believe that, because the message that I now know I'm giving is very, very important. So it's basically love yourself. Mm-hmm. That is the message.
So when did you finally share your truth with your closest loved ones? And how did you do that?
Well, it's kind of a tough story to tell because it was such a emotional moment. But it was when I was around 40 years old, about the 17th year of my marriage, that I had gotten to a point where I couldn't hold it in anymore. And I had kept this secret from everybody in the world. And I finally had to tell my spouse, and it was a very emotional night. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I was rolling on the bed back and forth, crying my eyes out. And she would say, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I can't tell you, but I want to tell you, but I can't tell you." Because I knew in my mind that it would be the end somehow. I was hoping it wouldn't. You know, I had a suitcase ready to pack and be out the door if I had to be. But it was just at that moment where I had to say, you know, I'm losing my mind. I need to tell someone. So I did finally say it, and she had to her credit, she said, "Is that all?" Because she thought I was dying. She thought I was, you know, I had cancer or something, and I was dying. And you cannot believe, we ended up talking for 4 hours that night. We didn't get any sleep. We both had to work the next day. And it was the hugest relief of my life. And she just, I couldn't believe it. Next day I wrote her a 3-page letter and thanked her for not kicking me out. And, you know, it was just so huge of a thing. It was a great relief, but oh my God, now it opened a whole new Pandora box and basically put her in my closet. And thankfully she had a couple sisters that she was able to tell, and they kept it confidential. And so it never ever got out until I wanted it out further than it was, which was when I transitioned. So, we ended up divorcing, and that was when people actually did find out. And that was really hard too, really hard. Yeah, I speak out there to people who think this was a choice, and I tell you, talk with me for a half hour and I will show you. I will show you the scars that I have from this ordeal. And believe me, I didn't choose this at all. And I do have some questions for God at the end of this whole deal, believe me, when I get up there. Oh, I'm going to heaven, I know that. In case you don't think I am, but so God and I are going to talk, that's for sure, because somehow something messed up. But there's a bigger message here. So, you know, I feel like I'm the right person, or one of the people that can get the message out to people, because it isn't about me. It's about everybody else. In fact, the reason that our suicide rate is so high is not because we are discomforted or are screwed up in our minds.
Yeah.
It's because of how we get treated by everybody else. Because so really, you want to lower that suicide rate? Start treating people like me with love instead of judgment. Learn compassion instead of judgment. That's the whole key. Once you get to the compassionate place, it's easy. You go, "Oh my God, I can't believe you had to go through that." Mm-hmm. Well, believe it, because it actually happened. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But if we can move you from judgment to compassion, you will get it. You will truly get it.
There are stories now of parents who are listening to their children and helping them to live.
It's beautiful.
And, you know, sometimes they get criticism from others saying, you know, this is just a phase and you're indulging your child. But I really want to get out there that the stakes are so high.
So
it's life
high.
And death. And, you know, again, it's not the child that has to change or their parents.
Exactly.
It's really, you have a beautiful quote in your YouTube message. You say, you know, people look at me and think I'm the crazy one. But from your perspective, you point out that it's the world around you
exactly.
that is that has the changing to
right,
do.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, it's such an interesting twist on that whole perspective.
It is such an interesting twist. And again, I go back to how we're looking for our happiness. And everyone creates I call it a happiness bubble. And if people aren't fitting into that happiness bubble, they just move them out of it. And so they can maintain their little happiness. Well, they don't realize that the happiness that they're looking for isn't in that bubble. It's back in themselves. So they'll never be happy when they look outside of themselves and have this, what they perceive as happiness, because they're looking at through their job. Mm-hmm. I mean, people aren't even doing the jobs they love. They're doing jobs for money, not because they want to do them. And then they're with people that they don't really, really love. They're basically, they need them to be in their life because they don't want to be alone, and they need somebody to validate they're a good person. And so, it's a big deal, but it's the message.
Yeah.
Tell us about the progression of your transition. First, you said that, and then, you know, you ended up actually transitioning. And what was the reaction of your school when you said, after this break, I'm coming?
Well, no one knew. Okay. No one knew. So it was at the end of the school year. It was so funny because the building rep for our union was this young kid, and neat guy. He ended up moving down to California. But so I emailed him. I said, Gabe, I need to talk to you about something after school. He goes, emails me right back. Okay. So he said, come on down to my room. So I did. And we were out in the hallway. And he said, what's up? And I said, well, I really can't talk to you about it out here. I need to go in a room. He was like puzzled by that, but he goes, okay. So we go in the room, and I basically said, I don't know how to tell you this without just saying it. And I said, I want to come back next year as Nicole. And his mouth dropped and he was shocked, but to his credit as well, he was very supportive. And actually found out later that he had an uncle who was transgender that he didn't know about. So I said, well, what's the next step? He goes, well, we need to tell the union president and then let them carry the ball, and we'll get that rolling for you. I said, great. So that was in March of 2009. And then since I knew that the ball was starting to roll, I had a couple other faculty members that I trusted enough to tell. And I handpicked them because I knew that they would be supportive, or I sure hoped that they would. Because if I couldn't have trusted them, then my whole world would have caved in. But to their credit, they accepted, and they were very curious, of course. But I told them one at a time over the period of about a month when I had a chance to just stop in at their room and tell them. So then, they all knew, but then the district got involved, and we had a meeting, and they said, we don't want anybody to know this until school starts. And there's to be no media, no hoopla. We're just going to do it. Kids are going to show up, and you're going to be different. So I said, okay. So, well, throughout the summer, by August, nothing had happened, but about a week before school started, I'm sitting in my house at my computer, and I get a phone call from a close friend, and she said, Nicole, David just called me. Her husband had just called her and said he was listening to this radio show, and he didn't know what the show was about, but he thought that they were talking about me. So she goes, tune in the show. I think they're talking about you. And I go, oh my God, I didn't tell anybody. What it ended up happening was somebody got the word somehow and leaked it to the radio station, this radio station. And is it okay to say the guy's name?
I wish you would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was the Lars Larson show. And
he's a conservative talk show host in Portland.
And he ripped me a new one for 2 hours that day and then 2 hours the next day. And he had people calling in from all over the state saying, would you have that person in your classroom and teaching your kid? And a lot of them said, no, I would never have him do that. And it was just a big fiasco. It was just so negative. It was horrible. So then the school had to be involved because now the media wants to get involved. And so I'd heard the show and I called up my principal and he didn't answer. So I called up the PR person at our district and I said, and she answered. And I said, did you just listen to that Lars Larson show? She goes, no, what happened? I said, they just talked the whole show about me and what's going on. And I said, and I think, and then Channel 2 got a hold of me and they wanted to interview me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the district's stance was no media. Well, I said, well, that kind of got blown out of the water with Lars here. So I said, I think I need to have this one interview with Channel 2 so that they can put a face to the name that's being thrown around like this crazy person, so they can, that people can see I'm not crazy. So the PR lady goes, do what you got to do. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. So I called Channel 2 back and I said, come on over. So they show up in my house and have a 15 or 20 minute interview. And I said, this is the only interview I'm going to get. I just wanted to get my face out there so people can see it, but I'm not going to give any more interviews. Well, then Channel 2, Channel 6, Channel 8, all these other, Channel 12, they came and parked on my yard.
Oh my.
And knocked on my door and then on my windows.
No.
Yes, I was a prisoner in my own home. It was awful. So I guess that's what they do to get a story like that. But yeah, it was not good. So now it's, you know, in public and this is a week before school starts. So then I go to school my first day as in the teacher meetings. And, oh my God. I had talked to some teachers of mine, the teacher friends that I had told in the spring, please come and get me before the meeting. I don't want to go over the meeting by myself. And they said they would. So there were like four or five women that came and got me. But before they did, one of the male teachers that I had told, he didn't know anything about who was coming to get me. He came to get me before they did, not knowing that they were going to. And he comes into my classroom and goes, Nicole, let's go. He was the sweetest guy. He just retired this year. I'll never forget him. Oh, my God. Ward, thank you so much for that. So, we go to the meeting and I sit down at the table. We open the door and there's one table that's got the chairs by it that we can sit at. And we all sit out real quick. And just right before at 8 o'clock when the meeting was supposed to start, and the principal sees us come in and he goes, well, I guess we got the elephant in the room now. But, and to his credit, he said, but we're all professionals here.
Mm.
We're here to do school. We're doing school. So yeah. Off we went with that. And the rest of that day was great because throughout the day after we got through our meetings, which were fine, teachers would show up in my classroom when I was going back to do it and just wish me well and write little notes. And
wow,
one of the PE teachers gave me flowers and it was amazing. So that was good. And then a couple of days later when school started, I was scared to death. And the kids showed up and I bought Costco muffins and had them in my room, but they didn't eat them. They just sat there. I said, go eat some muffins. No, I was trying to get them, you know, buttered up a little bit. No, but as soon as that first class came into my classroom and I said, here's some muffins if you want them, they didn't know me before. I had never had them before. I only had like one or two of the kids prior that next year, which is what I knew of as a teacher. I said, I don't have to teach parents. I'm going to teach the kids. And if I can look like a teacher in the front, that's kind of normal, I'll be okay. And that's exactly what happened. So I said, okay, we're going to do math today. And off we went. And I haven't looked back since. And that was over 5 years ago. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. And
I feel like applauding after the story.
It's truly amazing.
Happy ending.
And I didn't know that I'd keep my job.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So. Yeah. Yeah, let's take a quick musical break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about your message, your vision for how we can, embrace all the differences that make the universe.
Exactly. Yeah.
So another song picked by Nicole.
This is One Life to Live by Lou Rawls.
So live it in peace, Live it in truth. Live it in love. Day, like it's your last one. You take control of your emotions, all your doubts and fears, and just laugh at the world and all its sadness, and replace joy for those salty, bitter tears. Your best shot.
That was Lou Rawls with One Life to Live, a song handpicked by our guest tonight, Nicole, a transgender woman here to share her personal story with us. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO.
Nicole, can we talk a little bit about the transformation really that our culture will need to go through in order for what happened to you to never happen to
exactly.
anybody else?
Yes. What I would like to say to our listening audience out there, and I challenge you for this one, think of all the people in your life that you love, your spouse, your siblings, your kids, your friends. And I want to ask you this. If you've told them you love them, a lot of those people, you say it all the time, what would you do if they came to you and they said, I'm transgender? And I ask you this because would they come to you, or would they be really, really scared to come to you? Mm-hmm. Because it is at that place where, what do you say to those people that you have already told them you love them? What does that mean? Does your love mean love? And love only has one definition, and that's unconditional love. It's unconditional. There is no condition for love. It is given freely and unconditionally, especially when you tell people that you love them. So what will you do? I have my feeling about how people are, and I've said we're all looking for happiness. But I have a feeling that a lot of people, when they say they love someone, they are really saying that they need someone, because they're not truly going to be there for them when they really, really will need them. And I've witnessed it. I've been through it. I don't begrudge anybody who's left my life. I'm trying to educate. If you're listening right now, or if you will ever listen to this, I'm trying to educate you to say the hardest thing about what I've been through is all the people who said they love me and left. How can you tell me you love me and then leave? To me, that meant that you needed me to be a certain way. And in your little happiness bubble, I fit before, and now I don't fit in it. And for you to keep your happiness, you had to kick me out of it. And here's what I'm telling you. Love yourself. If we all loved ourselves, no one would care what anybody else did, because it would be, everybody would be happy. So no one would think that I'll be unhappy if someone is happy because they changed into something that I didn't like or I don't understand. It doesn't matter if you understand it. All you need to understand is that they're happy, because if they're happy, you should be happy for them, and that shouldn't have anything to do with you, because now you just need to find your own happiness in your own self so that everybody around you And that they'll sense that in you. And that person who is struggling with their self, because they know that if they tell someone this secret, they'll walk away. I pray to God that when you say that you love them, that you'll be there for them when they come to you, if that would happen. And believe me, I don't wish it on anyone, but it's going to happen. There are people like us everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you don't think we exist. Oh yeah, we do. We're everywhere.
Yeah, actually, a little icon for the promotion of the show on the KBOO website today. I chose a picture that says, someone I know, I heart, someone I love is trans. Mm-hmm. Because beautiful. You are absolutely right. You know, people are everywhere. And
yes. But all we're all just meant to love each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're moving. I mean, if we don't get there, you'd be left behind. Mm-hmm. Because, let's figure this out. Because, like I said, we're beautiful, loving, wonderful people. And you just got to get to know us if you're scared of us. So,
yeah. But, you know, we talked a little bit about the suicide rate, but there's also so much discrimination. And obviously the suicide rate is a result of the discrimination, but there's also harassment. There is so often in the news, transgender individuals, men, women who are being attacked, killed.
Yeah.
In horrific conditions simply because people are just not understanding.
They just don't understand. So they rather, like I said, at the ultimate end, instead of just removing them from their bubble, they won't let them go to another place. Mm. They'll just let them, end them right now. So it's fear. It's what their preconceived notion of how the world should be gets messed up. And the quote that you said earlier that I had given to you about difference is the norm of the universe. I mean, I'm a huge person of the outside of our world thought, and the beings that are outside our world don't look like us. So you think you can't get along with people here that look different? Oh my God, you're going to have quite a wake-up call. So yeah. It's differences everywhere.
You pointed out in a pre-conversation that transgender people are the last group of people who face this discrimination, and you don't benefit from the rights that people in the gay and lesbian community have fought for and are beginning to be able to enjoy now.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are apart. You're often grouped together with homosexuality or the gay culture, but it's not the same.
No.
And you don't get the benefits of housing. You're discriminated against with housing and employment, and it's sanctioned.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And people vote to keep it the way it is now. You know, they'll say, well, we'd like to change that. Oh, no, we don't want to change that. And it varies from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why these kind of shows are so important. You know, if one person becomes more aware because of what we're doing tonight, then, you know, this makes it all worth it. And that's my goal is, you know, one person at a time. It's going to take a long time. But when progress is made, we'll get there.
Yeah.
So.
How can people really show their support and really try to foster inclusion of all beings?
Well, not that all transgender people are obviously transgender. There are a lot of people out there that are trans that you would never, never, ever know. But if you ever suspect someone is, first of all, they're scared to death that you're going to hurt them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're always looking over our shoulder. Believe me, everywhere I go, I'm looking over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know what kind of crazy is going to be out there. But what I would say to the general population is, when you see someone who is obviously trans to you, smile at them, say hi, treat them like a normal person, because they are a normal person, and just treat them like you treat anybody else. Say hi, smile, how you doing today? It might freak them out because they've never had people do that to them, but it will genuinely be something that trans person will appreciate for sure, absolutely. We just want to be normal. Quote unquote, what is normal anyway? I've never figured that one out. But what most people thought of what normal is such a small definition. But just if you recognize someone who you think is, please just care about them. Just care about them. Smile and just treat them like any other person. That's the biggest message I would say. But also make sure that you care enough about yourself that it doesn't matter who they are or what they're doing, because they're just trying to get by. They're just trying to maneuver this world just like you are. And you're lucky that you didn't happen to you. That's what I will say. It could have happened to anybody. And it just happened to be me or the other person down the hall. And I'd now take it as a huge responsibility to be speaking like we are tonight and bring out a message that, hey, we're in it together. It's all about loving each other anyway. Why do we have to make it more complicated than that? It's not complicated. Just love each other, for crying many sakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole deal.
Yes, but I think that you also have a very good point as to, you know, the happiness comes from inside.
Absolutely.
So loving yourself
Absolutely.
Is the first step.
Absolutely.
What would be, you know, your suggestion maybe if people are listening, maybe they have that rock in their shoe, whatever the rock may be.
Yeah.
What would be, you know, your words of support?
Well, I would say find someone who they are comfortable with, confident, that they are not going to be hurtful in any way, to be supportive. I don't know who that person would be. I mean, I tried to do it with a priest, and that was one of the worst people I could have went to. I hate to say that, Catholic people, but he was not supportive at all. He said, "Have you seen a psychiatrist?" So I would say find that one person in your life that you trust with your heart, because it's going to be very vulnerable. And if it's a counselor, a teacher, I think that this topic is well enough aware in the public that counselors are for sure understanding. And that if you're an older, a teenage type student, I would say the counselor, because they are very compassionate people. And I know if your parents are like that, great. I don't know. I really don't know. Just find someone that would be supportive.
Just get it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it out.
Get it out.
Because you will be a much happier person. Mm-hmm. Much, much happier person. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I think we can all be, you know, much happier. You know, I think this is one of the beauty of your message. You know, one of the things that resonated with me the most is when you say, this is not about being transgender, it's about being me and being happy.
Exactly. It is. Yeah. It is just that. Yeah. Now, whatever, you know, it was one of my obstacles. Everybody has stuff. Mm-hmm. Everybody has stuff that they go through. Mine just happened to be a pretty big one. But everybody, you know, if you talk to other people, they'll say, well, I had a pretty big one too. I had blah, blah, blah happen to me. Well, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to turn it into a positive? Are you going to, you know, not let it get to your happiness? And I didn't. I obviously have done something about it to make myself overcome that obstacle that I had. It was a flipping big one, too. My God. And what it's cost me has been amazing. But what I got out of it is truly amazing as well. So yeah. I wouldn't be sitting here right now if I didn't feel that happiness in myself. I'd still be hiding in a hole.
You are, you know, there's happiness coming out of every side of you. I can confirm. Thank you so much, Nicole.
You are so welcome. I'm so appreciative to have you had me here
for, you know, sharing your story, but also really helping us transform and teach the community and learn together. So thank you so
That's
much
what
for
it's
your
about.
Message
yep you're right
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to Bread and Roses. Again, Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists, and we are always open to new members, no experience necessary. Please don't hesitate to contact KBOO, Ani Haynes, at volunteer@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 213. You can listen to the podcast of this show later this evening on the Bread and Roses site, the KBOO site, kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. Also, please connect with us on Facebook. You can send questions for our guest via Facebook if you like, or the KBOO website. We're under KBOO Bread and Roses on Facebook. I'm Leanne Kranz, my co-host tonight.
Delphine Crescenzo. Have a wonderful week, everyone. And we're going to leave you with one final song selected by Nicole to underscore her message. That's Happy by Pharrell Williams.
Good night,
have a good
everybody.
Night.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break.
KBOO. 90.7 FM. It is 7 o'clock, and we are about to tune into Hard Knock Radio news, views, and hip-hop. So definitely stay tuned.
Tune in to KABU for the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. KABU will again broadcast the entire festival from noon to 10 p.m., July 3rd through the 6th. The broadcast will also be carried by various stations of Oregon Community Media for statewide coverage of this Oregon Food Bank Benefit Festival. Again, July 3rd through the 6th, noon to 10 p.m. each day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This single, independent radio station is searching for the 10x10 pop-up of our dreams. Must love travel, the outdoors, music festivals, and live remote radio broadcasts. If you can spare the canvas structure we're craving, call us at 503-231-8732 to donate today. Run away with us to our community radio station, KABU.
I'm Anita Johnson, and this is Hard Knock on the Pacifica Network. Joining me now to discuss homosexuality and redefining masculinity is